Hello and welcome to At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners, which we hope will also be of interest to the not so old. I'm Richard Davis, and I hope you'll stay with me for the next hour. Here's a flavour of what's coming up in that time. If you're a long-term listener to At Home This Morning, you may remember that back in April, we spoke to Colin Smith, a local man in his 70s, who was planning to take part in a sponsored abseil from the I-360 in aid of the Rocking Horse Fund. And at the time, he promised to come back into the studio and talk about the experience. Well, true to his word, he took part in the abseil, and he came back to our studio to talk about it. So we'll be hearing from him. Then we'll also be finding out about a trust in Brighton and Hove, which exists to give grants to organisations that are working for the benefit of older people. And we'll be hearing once again about the new Brighton Lifeboat Station at the Marina, which opened at the beginning of this year. As usual, we'll be giving out various email addresses, website addresses and telephone numbers during the course of the programme, so you may like to have a pencil and paper handy so that you can write them down. So let's get started by hearing from Colin Smith. As I said, he duly took part in the abseil, and he duly came back into our studio to tell us about it. And when he did, Maya Davis spoke to him.
Well, welcome back, Colin. Nice to see you all in one piece. Remind us what the cause was that you did the abseil for and when it was.
It was on the 28th of April, after being postponed from March, and it took place down on the I-360. 29 of us, I think, actually completed the challenge. It went very well, and it was in aid of the Rocking Horse charity that are sort of sponsoring the Trevor Mann premature baby unit, and they are trying to buy a scanner, a very special scanner.
Oh, right.
So it was a very good cause.
So how much did you raise?
I raised just under 2,000, but with the gift aid would be quite well over 2,000.
Do you know how much was raised altogether by everyone else who took part?
The last figure I heard was about 48,000.
Wow, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah, so it's halfway towards the scanner.
Great. So how did you feel about it?
I was very relaxed going up, a bit fearful when I got up there, and they harnessed me up, and when I looked at the thickness of the rope, it didn't look very thick. It looked more like a piece of string.
And you were abseiling right from the top of the I-360.
Yeah, right from the very top. And as a young lad went before me, wasn't very big. And then the instructors told us, or told me as I went, that I would probably bounce about because the rope has to stretch. There's a lot of give in the rope. So I did bounce about quite a lot.
How did you feel about that?
Oh, not too bad, but I think the worst part was I slipped as I left the platform. I forgot that my trainers were wet and I slipped off the bar. You back out onto the edge on your toes, like a diver doing a backward flip. And I slipped at that stage, but they had a tight hold on me, so I didn't fall very far.
Oh, that was good. I bet that was a relief.
Yes. But other than that, once I was coming down, I hung on for dear life, but I don't think I needed to have done.
It's one of these things that once you're committed, you've got no choice.
Well, that's it. Yeah.
Now, you weren't the only over 70 taking part, were you?
No, there was a lady of 85. I think she did speak to me at the top, and she said, "I'm not at all nervous," she said. "I'm looking forward to it. Are you nervous?" And I said, "Absolutely petrified." But I said, "But that's the challenge." I said, if I enjoyed it, I wouldn't really feel like asking people for money to enjoy myself. So being as I was petrified and it was a real challenge, you don't mind asking people to sponsor you.
And did anyone say no?
No, I don't think there was anybody.
Well, I suppose a combination of the cause and the
yes.
fact you were honest about saying, oh, yeah. I'm scared. Yeah. So the 85-year-old lady did pretty well too then?
Yes, she did very well, waving her arms about as she came down.
Oh, bit of a showman.
Yes.
Or showwoman. There were lots of young people doing it with you as well. How did they respond to you two?
Couple past comments like, oh, well done, you know, it's very brave of you doing it. And but most of them were sort of in their 30s and 40s. And Chris Eubank Jr., he took part. And obviously he was a bit of a star for the press.
And did you get any photos from the press?
No. Oh. Only the group one. I was in the group one, but no.
Oh, that's a shame. Now, this isn't the first time you've done something like this, is it, Colin?
No, I started back in my 70th year. My first real challenge, I think, was... Oh, the skydive.
Skydive?
Skydive. Free-fall skydive.
Blimey, tell us about that.
Well, that was only because I mainly raise money for the Martlets. I've raised quite a few... probably about 12,000 now for the Martlets. I know I had to cancel one event I was going to do, and I said, well, I'll do the next event, whatever it is. And they said, they looked at me and smiled, and they said, do you mean that? And I said, yes. And they said, well, the next one is a free-fall skydive. And for somebody who doesn't like heights, it couldn't have been a worse challenge, but I did it. And
how did that go then?
Oh, the free fall is fantastic, but I didn't like the parachute bit because you spin round quite a lot. I only have to spin round about twice and I'm dizzy.
Oh, dear. And after that, what happened?
After that, I did... I went down the cliffs at Peacehaven twice, and then...
Was that an abseil?
That was an abseil, yes. And then... I don't know what made me do it. I volunteered to do something for Click Sargent, the children's charity. I rather fancied doing the Spinnaker Tower. I thought that would be a real challenge. I think that was to celebrate being 70.
That was the abseil, was it?
That was the abseil, yes.
Yeah.
And, yes, that went well. That was good.
So actually, by the time you did the I-360, abseil,
yeah.
Easy peasy.
And I also have done the zip wire off the top of St Dunstan's, but a lot of children do that, so I don't feel that was a big achievement.
Mm-hmm.
But it sort of got me in the mood for zip wiring, so...
Oh, I see. So have you done another zip wire since then?
Not since then, no. But
right. What have you done? Anything else? Or abseiling, skydiving sounds quite a lot
no,
to me.
That's about it.
That's about it, is it? Right. Well, you've got another challenge to come then, have you?
Yes, it looks like it in a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Any plans?
Well, only perhaps the big zip wire up in Wales. That would be like the ultimate. They say it's the fastest in the world.
Oh, quite a modest challenge,
yes.
Then.
You lay flat for that one, so...
Right. Fine. So it's a bit like flying, I suppose.
A bit like being a bullet out of a gun.
Not sure I'd fancy that. So in between now and then, what are you going to do?
Oh, I'm not quite sure. A lot more fundraising, or helping fundraising for the Martlets. It's ironic, really, because I've done fundraising for the Martlets for quite a few years now, and now I'm going to the other end of the spectrum, and I've been doing it for the Rocking Horse, which is for premature babies and sort of helping people into the world and helping
people
go out of the world. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, why not?
Yes.
I mean, it looks as though you've got quite a few years of fundraising to go.
Hopefully.
Not necessarily abseiling and zip wiring, but certainly helping out.
Yes.
Have you managed to raise lots and lots of money then? How much do you think you raised in your time?
Oh, I don't know. Of course, money's gone up in value, so... But I used to do pram races in my very younger days and things like that. And no, it would be a job to put a figure on it. But no, it's been pretty steady.
So basically, you've been charity fundraising most of your life?
Yes, yeah. And I'd hear people like a friend of a friend wanted a page turner because he was disabled. So I did a fundraise for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a dare once that I ordered a fancy dress Lala outfit from the Teletubbies.
Right.
And people dared me. I had it for a party on a Saturday, and on the Sunday people dared me to run across in front of the stage at Party in the Park. That was a few years ago, but well, about 10 years ago. And
did you do it?
Yes, I did it.
And how much did you raise then? Any ideas?
Oh, there were several hundred.
Hmm.
Yeah, and that went to Great Ormond Street. So,
how do you persuade people to sponsor you all the time? I mean, do you have to ask the same people each time, or is it different people?
Basically, yeah, the same people all the time.
You've got some very loyal friends then, and
yes,
quite a band of supporters.
Ironically enough, my wife, who is a nanny, or was a nanny throughout her working life, and like four of the children, babies that she looked after, all started life in the premature baby unit. So it was quite ironic that I should be doing this for them. And I had a T-shirt printed with, on the front, it was to my brother, the memory of my brother and my best friend who died last year.
Mm.
And on the back, it was a big thank you from these four children who started life in the premature baby unit.
And are they among your sponsors?
Oh, yes. Yes, very much so. And some of them go back 25 years. They're now 25. We're still in touch with them and still friends.
Great. So you've got things to look forward to.
Yes.
Lots of achievements to look back on.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, you're going to carry on fundraising, but maybe not in quite such a scary way.
No, that's it.
That sounds absolutely brilliant, Colin. Well, thank you very much for coming back. Hope your next challenge and all your fundraising goes really, really well. And good luck with everything.
Okay, thank you. And yes, I should keep supporting the Martlets and hopefully the Rocking Horse.
Brilliant.
Two wonderful charities.
They are, and they're both local, which is even better.
Okay.
Great, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Maya Davis was talking to Colin Smith, who recently took part in a sponsored abseil from the top of the I-360 in aid of the Rocking Horse charity. Well, since I took on the job of presenting at home this morning, I've been continually amazed by the number of organisations that exist in the Brighton and Hove area for the benefit of older people. But one I hadn't heard about until very recently is a group called the Paley Trust. So to find out more, I invited two members of the Trust, Peter Otto and Mary Mears, to come into the studio and tell me about it. And when they did, I began by asking Peter to explain what the Paley Trust is.
The Paley Trust is a trust set up by Mrs. Zoe Paley in 1989, so 28 years ago, with a legacy, a substantial legacy actually, to the benefit of older people in Brighton and Hove. The Paley Trust is an independent charity who is working in close cooperation with other organizations to provide help, especially to the older people of Brighton and Hove, to support their needs and improve their well-being.
So the trust exists in order to administer the effects of this legacy from Zoe Paley.
Exactly.
And to make good use of the income from her investments.
Correct.
What sort of projects do you normally support?
Oh, the projects we usually support are independent voluntary groups with no specific income. So there are groups like music and art, healthy living, lunch and healthy cooking clubs, befriending groups, Christmas parties. And that works quite well, actually, over the years.
And these are all groups that are dealing with older people, are they?
Of course.
Do you ever make grants to individuals?
No, that is not possible according to our constitution. It has to be independent, social, voluntary groups, or working together with other charities in connection, but not an not to individuals, no.
So they're charitable groups, but they're not commercial at all?
Oh, no, no way at all, no, because we are not allowed to support enterprise in any way.
So over the years that the Trust has been running, how much money has it distributed, do you think?
We distributed over the years approximately $250,000.
That's very good.
Yes, I wish I had the money.
How often do you make grants?
Now, more or less once a year. In the first half year, we discuss who is eligible before we're handing out the money in the second half of the year. But it is usually 4 to 5 groups who are then entitled to some kind of grants.
I gather you have a group of trustees who
yes.
run the charity.
Yes, that's right.
How many of you are there?
4 trustees and an independent advisor.
Right, and how are the trustees appointed?
If we have to change the trustee through retirement or moving away or whatever, then the remaining trustees coming together and look for a suitable candidate.
How often do the trustees meet?
4 times a year.
Are there any projects that you've supported in the past that are particularly memorable?
The Christmas party of Leech Court. It's a few years ago. Quite funny. Because we went there as guests then, of course, to the Christmas party. Not only to hand over the cheque, but to take part of it. And then the ladies decided we had to take part in the dancing.
Oh, right.
And our trustee then, who just retired, Michael Banner, crowd under the table because he didn't want to know anything about it. We not only paid the grant, but we had to work hard for it to get rid of the money.
Yeah, I presume that doesn't happen very often.
No, it doesn't happen very often. But otherwise, if we talk about groups who received, that is, for instance, we supported Music for Life, that is a music group for older people, which involves the Regency Singers. The Regency Singers is a group of singers between the age of 65 and 92 and usually perform on events like the Mass Charity Performance Evening and Rotting Dean Fair on a Tuesday evening, come together on an open mic. Then we have supported Lunch Club in Hove. We supported
Lunch Club in Moscombe.
Mad Hatters.
Mad Hatters, yeah.
I was looking for the name. Right now, at the moment, we are in negotiations with Cycling Without Age, the new thing with the rickshaws going along the seafront. And this looks very positive. Then we have 1 or 2... maybe Christmas parties coming up again, which we have to talk about. So there is no decision made yet. So what we do is with these grants, we try go across town. So it is either Port Slade or Kemp Town.
To add to what Peter has said around the groups that we actually fund, it's been an interesting time and they're very quite diverse. We attended a lunch club in Port Slade, run through a section of to the side of a church, where all the volunteers cooked the meals. And so that was a really interesting one. We also did another lunch club where they had volunteers cooking lunch in Hove. And the same with the Mad Hatters in Moscombe and Hangleton, where they all provide lunches for the elderly in the area. It is predominantly for the elderly so they can get out and socialise, which is a big thing because it actually addresses loneliness, which is really important. so they can socialise with other people. They have a lunch, or and then obviously the one, other ones we have done is the Christmas parties, and there again, right across the piece, we've done them in Leech Court, Somerset House, Courtney King House, different places, and it actually means older people can sit and enjoy the company with a meal. It encourages them to come out of their flats, particularly if it's in a high rise, and they're not on their own. Loneliness is a big thing as people get older, and it's really important that through Paley Trust we take it quite seriously, that enables us by funding these events to give them an opportunity to engage with their neighbours.
It sounds as if you're doing a very good job in administering these funds and providing a very worthwhile service to various charities in the area.
That is why we are keen to hear from people who run voluntary groups like music and arts, healthy living, lunch and healthy cooking clubs, befriending schemes, etc., which have no particular income.
It's amazing how many voluntary groups there are in the city.
Oh, yes.
Right across the piece, Brighton, yes. Hove and Portslade. Yes. There are so many volunteers that give up their time to enable, you know, groups, yes, to meet, which is fantastic.
How much money do you give out each year?
So with small groups, like, for instance, lunch clubs or Christmas parties or whatever, we usually give a small grant of £500. We usually do not give grants in successive years, so if they want to come back, they have to wait a year or two before they can apply again. But again, this is all a matter of discussion between the trustees.
And how do people go about applying for grants?
So, for instance, this is relatively simple. You can contact us under the info@paleytrust.org.uk and introduce yourself. Then we may arrange a meeting with the group talking to us and discuss the possibility if they are in need or worthy to be supported by the Paley Trust.
Okay. So Peter Otto and Mary Mears, thank you very much.
You're more than welcome.
Thank you very much for having us.
I was talking to Peter Otto and Mary Mears of the Paley Trust. If you're a member of an organisation which would like to get a grant from the Paley Trust, you can contact them by email, and the address is info@paleytrust.org.uk. And Paley is spelt P-A-L-E-Y. So that email address is info@paleytrust.org.uk. Now, in the next part of the programme, I'm repeating an item that we first broadcast in January of this year. Here's Chris English to introduce it.
If you've been down to Brighton Marina lately, you'll have seen there's another new building. This time it's the headquarters of Brighton Lifeboat. And at a ceremonial opening, I went down there, stood in the boathouse. You can tell that because of the noises in the background. And I spoke to Richard Pearce and asked him what his position actually was in the RNLI.
I'm a launching authority on one of them.
What does that mean, first of all?
Well, a launching authority for the lifeboat, it's the go-between between the Coast Guard, which are government, and the Coast Guard are responsible for search and rescue all around our coastline. The RNLI is a charity, so you can't really have the government controlling a charity. There has to be that go-between. So it doesn't delay things, but if the Coast Guard require the lifeboat, they actually page our pagers. It comes up as a launch request message on our pagers. All the crew get that, and they all start moving because they know something's happening. And I will then ring the Coast Guard, and we can have a quick discussion on what they need us for. And because of my local knowledge, I'll probably be able to perhaps advise them that we might need a bigger lifeboat, we might need a helicopter, It's very rare for me to say no, but there may be a situation where, because of local sea conditions or exceptionally low tides at our marina entrance, it may be just completely dangerous or unwise for us to even think about going and to try and get Newhaven or Shoreham lifeboat to come along.
You talked about local knowledge. You were a beachmaster, weren't you, before you retired?
I was involved with Brighton Council Seafront Office and also with the lifeguard patrol boat and all the lifeguards that the council has from Saltdean right the way down to Hove Lagoon. I'm still involved in it in a semi-retired state, and I get quite involved with keeping the maintenance going and watching over the servicing of the smaller lifeguard patrol boat, which does a fantastic job, and it actually stops the lifeboat here being called out to silly little things like kids in rubber rings a few metres offshore.
And that is owned by the council, isn't it?
That is completely owned by the council, but it's I like to think we have a good, I'm the go-between between the council and the lifeboat, the RNLI service, so that we can both support one another. And in fact, the RNLI here do give permission for the lifeguards running the patrol boat just to use the facilities here at the lifeboat station through the summer.
We'll talk about the brand new lifeboat station in a moment, but something the general public don't often see is we're actually down here with the lifeboat. Describe it for us.
Well, this lifeboat is actually the latest. It's called a semi-rigid inflatable, but it weighs about 2 tonnes. It's 8.5 metres long, possibly slightly longer than that, actually, because that 8.5 metres is the bit that sits in the water. It has twin 115 horsepower engines on it. That gives it, it can probably do 100 miles before, it starts running out of fuel. It does about 35 knots, which is possibly getting up to 40 miles an hour miles per hour.
And in water terms, that's very fast, isn't
it? It is very fast, yes. And for coping with sea conditions, strangely enough, it can actually scoop up seawater and keep it in the front part of the boat, the bell, in order to give it more nose weight, which is really useful for trying to get out of our marina entrance, which can be extremely rough.
It can be very dodgy, aren't they? Now, the boat, you can't help but notice, is a mass of electronics.
It is, yes. They really have gone to town on it now. And in fact, what we have now on the boat almost equals to what some of the bigger boats like at Newhaven and Shoreham have got on board. We've got radio direction finding, we have the latest electronic maps, and we have radar on there. Even the radio, you push a button. If you didn't quite get what somebody said to you last time, you can push a button and it'll sort of repeat itself.
Really?
Yes, yeah, it's quite amazing, yes.
And so all of that in a slightly hostile environment of salt water, you'd think the two don't go together.
It does suffer sometimes, but we've actually got a brilliant lot of mechanics, the RNLI employ, that go around keeping it maintained. And always crews send feedback on how that can be improved. And it is really now state of the art, yes, yeah.
And how old is this boat?
This boat is actually, I think, possibly about 2 or 3 years old.
It looks brand new.
It does, yes, because all lifeboats have a refit very regularly. They go back to the boatyards and they're completely, refitted, stripped out. And there is actually a fleet of relief boats, which people have actually raise money and donated just for a relief boat, and these actually just travel the country backing up boats where this happens, where boats have to go back for refit.
Now, you talked earlier about you're the launching authority. Now, all the crew are volunteers, aren't they?
Yes, yeah, we're all volunteers, including myself, and we don't get paid for it at all, so it's which I think makes it better, because people join because they want to do it, not because they're getting paid for it.
I was going to say why.
You know, why put your lives at risk in an extremely uncomfortable situation?
It is, but actually, with the equipment that the RNLI supply, it takes the danger away from it. I must admit, I do admire when you see these old pictures where they went out rowing in oilskins and they were gone on a simple call out and they were gone for days and days sometimes, even though it was down the coast or they had to get a team of horses to pull the boat overland. We've actually got it quite easy in these day and age because the equipment is actually so good.
And how much would a boat like this cost?
I'm not absolutely too sure on that one. I think it's over £200,000, but I couldn't give you an exact figure.
But a lot of money.
An awful lot of money.
I mean, you can buy something like an 8-metre rib, which is basically what this is, at a boat show for about 50 or 60,000, can't you? So what makes this one different?
It's really everything that's gone into it, and because everything is double the strength on it. Everything has been looked at, has been tested, and everything that comes into making the boat is looked at and tested before it's fitted onto the boat. In some cases, it's even weighed to make sure that the centre of gravity and all the balance is correct for the boat.
Richard, thank you.
No problem.
Staying with the RNLI theme, while I was in the new building, I ventured into the equally new shop and spoke to Margaret Kimber and asked her how vital fundraising activities like the shop were to the RNLI.
Fundraising is vitally important. It's their only means of raising money to pay for the amazing equipment that they have. They have the very best of equipment in terms of boats, their kit. Without that, they wouldn't get volunteers who risk their lives. These people know that their kit will keep them afloat, warm, dry, and anything else.
And safe, presumably.
And safe, yes.
Now, I've just talked about the shop. What exactly have you got in terms of stuff in the shop?
We have a variety of things. We have things for the beach, buckets and spades, nets, the like, and we also have general stationery, some mugs, children's toys, and just general gifts for people to take home or use as may be to support the RNLI.
And these are all branded RNLI items, aren't
they? All branded RNLI items, and 60% of the cost goes directly to the RNLI.
And is this the main fundraising activity in RNLI? I mean, what else can people do to support?
The main fundraising activity at the moment are legacies. 6 out of 10 launches are dependent on legacies, but as we all know, legacies are going to reduce with the lack of pensions and other things. So they are looking more and more and relying more and more on the generosity of people through collecting in supermarkets, the pledges, which is a very, very good way of helping when you haven't got time to give, to donate, to raise money, where people pledge so much per shout. Now, for example, this year, Brighton has had almost 70 shouts. If people do £1 a shout, that's £70 that it will have cost them. But it is a very easy way of helping raise money for the RNLI.
And how do people find out more about taking out a pledge?
For the local area, they need to contact Margaret Minsky, who is the secretary of the Brighton fundraising branch. Her details will be on the Brighton Lifeboat website, or if not, just contact Brighton Lifeboat website itself, send an email to them, and they will forward it on to her, and she will be able to send the forms and what's necessary.
Or come here to the shop. Now, you talk about volunteers. Richard was earlier talking about the crew. These are other volunteers, aren't they, in the shop? And is there any limitation? I mean, a lot of people listening to this programme are perhaps older, shall we say, kindly. Are those the sort of people?
Yes, anybody can volunteer. It's time is of the essence, of course. We're looking to do probably a 3-hour shift, 10 till 1 and then 1 till 4, especially during the summer months. The conditions are very pleasant. You've got a lovely view of the marina. warm. We've got disabled access and the facilities all required that you need. So, yes, really any age. We have a student who's volunteered who's coming down at the weekends, which is very nice. Again, she has to be of, I think he's over 17. But anybody with a few hours to spare, it would be most welcome if they would like to volunteer. And for that, they contact Janice Dykes, come down to the lifeboat shop, and we can give over the station and give the details over.
And if we're talking about elderly people or older people coming to help, presumably there's no heavy lifting involved or anything like that.
No lifting at all. All that is done by the shop manager or the crew helpers. And no, there is nothing strenuous at all. It's all very easy. As I say, even compared with the old days when the old shop, it's much easier.
And importantly, for anybody that hasn't been to the marina for a while, where exactly is the lifeboat station and the shop? Because they were separate before, weren't they?
They were separate, and now we're together. It helps considerably. To find it, you get to Wetherspoons, the West Quay pub at Wetherspoons, and then walk along towards the sea, towards the Brazilian restaurant, and on the left-hand side you'll see an unusual shaped building, and that is the lifeboat station, and the shop is just on the end of it. And within the shop we will have a visitor centre where children will be able to be dress up as crew. There are going to be activity sheets and activities for them, and for more senior members there is a history time wall pertinent to the Brighton lifeboat, linked also with the RNLI itself, and a webcam on the boat so that you can see the boat, and footage of rescues and the like, so it will be an active part as well.
And the lifeboat here to stay in Brighton?
Oh, definitely, yes. Yes, it's an essential part of Brighton and the marina. I think the marina's success is dependent on the lifeboat being here. The sailors know that there's somebody there to get them at a moment's notice.
Margaret, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chris English was talking to Margaret Kimber, and before that, Richard Pearce, both of the RNLI, on the occasion of the opening of the new Brighton lifeboat station in the marina. And that brings us to the end of our programme for this time. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed everything you've heard in this edition of At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners. There'll be another edition in a fortnight's time, and that'll be presented by Chris English. And I'll be back in 4 weeks' time. In the meantime, if you'd like to get in touch with me to let me know what you think of the programme, or perhaps to suggest items you might like me to cover in future editions, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me by email, and the address is info@greymattersproductions.org.uk. That's info, spelled I-N-F-O, at greymattersproductions, which is typed all as one word, .org.uk. And as I said, I'd love to hear from you. Well, it now only remains for me, Richard Davis, on behalf of Grey Matters Productions, who make this programme, to thank everyone who's taken part in the programme. Once again, to thank you for listening. Goodbye.